America is ready to get back to work, but to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you'll have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more, everything you need all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/getup. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/getup. That's netsuite.com/getup. Tomorrow on ESPN, it is the Coppa Italia final. Cristiano Ronaldo leading Juventus against Napoli. That's tomorrow, 2:50 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and on the ESPN app. Well, if you knew anything about Stuart Scott, you knew that if he saw something wrong, he would attack it until it was right. That is a trait that he shares with a woman half a world away. Mariam Shojaei saw generations of women being denied equality in Iran. So she took on a dictatorship and one of the most powerful sports organizations in the world until it was right. Here's her story in her own words.
The Stuart Scott Inspire Award is sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb.
For the past 40 years, for a woman in Iran, this is what a men's soccer match looked like. 41 million women banned from setting foot in Azadi Stadium to watch the men play.
If indeed try to go, we were detained, arrested, and even in prison.
In 2014, I continued the work started by previous activists. But for anyone who participates in any kind of activism, there are risks, there is fear.
من بیش از 12 بار جلوی ورزشگاه آزادی، ورزشگاه القدیر و ورزشگاه تختی بازداشت شدم و 5 بارش مجبور شدم توی بازداشتگاه بخوابم و فرداش رفتم دادگاه تعهد دادم.
We didn't risk all of that to watch soccer. We risked it all to claim our basic human rights. In 2015, I traveled to Australia and Canada and displayed my banner demanding Iranian women be allowed to enter Iranian stadiums. The banner caught the attention of international human rights organizations. At the FIFA World Cup in Russia, even though I received prior approval, I was detained and my banner was confiscated. That didn't stop me.
The Iranian Football Federation could ignore me, but they couldn't ignore FIFA.
It was time to hold this global organization accountable for not enforcing their own policies. I sent FIFA many letters and collected hundreds of thousands of signatures on our No Ban for Women petition. I spoke on several panels and did multiple interviews with global news outlets. FIFA finally spoke up. No women, no World Cup. On October 10th, 2019, as the gates opened, thousands of Iranian women took a historic step that they will never forget. Iran won the match 14-0, but the true victory was in the stands. Azadi means freedom in Persian. It took 40 years, but our stadium was finally starting to live up to its name.
For her tremendous impact on gender equality in Iran, Mariam will receive one of the 3 Stuart Scott Inspire Awards presented this year. The Sports Humanitarian Awards benefit the Stuart Scott Memorial Cancer Research Fund at the V Foundation. If you are able, please give at V.org. And with that, I'll also remind you the 28th annual ESPYs are happening virtually this Sunday night at 9, hosted by WNBA star Sue Bird, U.S. Women's National Team co-captain Megan Rapinoe, and Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson. This year's awards focus on service, perseverance, and courage in the world of athletics. We hope that you will watch. And with that, it is the bottom of the hour, 9:30 in the East here in Bristol, Connecticut. I'm Mike Greenberg. This is Get Up on ESPN. We're with you for another hour, and then First Take comes your way for a full 2 hours. this morning, and it is very busy indeed. Our top story, after telling Carl Ravitch last week, that he was 100% certain that there would be a baseball season last night, Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred backtracked on that. Here he was during our conversation on our SportsCenter special last night. I asked him if he still feels 100% sure.
Well, I know the owners are 100% committed to getting baseball back on the field. Unfortunately, I can't tell you that I'm 100% certain that's going to happen. I had been hopeful that once we got to common ground on the idea that we were going to pay the players full prorated salary, that we would get some cooperation in terms of proceeding under the agreement that we negotiated with the MLBPA on March 26th. Unfortunately, over the weekend, while Tony Clark was declaring his desire to get back to work, the union's top lawyer was out telling reporters, players, and eventually getting back to owners that as soon as we issued a schedule, as they requested, they intended to file a grievance claiming they were entitled to an additional $1 billion. Obviously, that sort of bad faith tactic makes it extremely difficult to move forward in these circumstances.
What are your concerns for the optics of this circumstance playing out as publicly as they are during the time in this country where all the other things, the confluence of events involving the pandemic and protests in the streets and everything else, of this playing out as publicly as it is?
It's just a disaster for our game. Absolutely no question about it. It shouldn't be happening. And it's important that we find a way to get past it and get the game back on the field for the benefit of our fans. We are running out of time. The clock is ticking on this. But the key, the important first step is a willingness on the part of the MLBPA to get back at the table and engage in the process.
Would you describe your feelings as confident that there will still be a season?
I'm not confident. Mike, I think there's real risk, and as long as there's no dialogue, that real risk is going to continue.
So we did that interview in the middle of the afternoon yesterday. We then reached out to the Players Association for the opportunity to respond, and they did with this statement. Players are disgusted that after Rob Manfred unequivocally told players and fans that there would 100% be a 2020 season, he has decided to go back on his word and is now threatening to cancel the entire season. Any implication that the Players Association has somehow delayed progress on health and safety protocols is completely false, as Rob has recently acknowledged the parties are very, very close. This latest threat is just one more indication that Major League Baseball has been negotiating in bad faith since the beginning. This has always been about extracting additional pay cuts from players, and this is just another day and another bad faith tactic in their ongoing campaign. This is the cover of the New York Daily News today, playing on the 100% number that obviously that Manfred had given to Carl Ravitch last week, and then did not see it the same way again yesterday. This certainly got a lot of attention yesterday, and I certainly understand why. Timmy Kirkchin, Eduardo Perez are with us this morning. Timmy, I will start with you. You're always the one I come to for context, for trying to put all the things that we see in baseball into some frame of reference. How would you do that here?
Well, I think the commissioner did it best last night with you, Greeny, when he said this is a disaster. It is a total mess at the moment. I woke up this morning to a one-word text from someone who would know what's going on, and he just said this is pitiful. And that's where we are right now. Greeny, I covered the 81 strike. I covered 94, 95. It was terrible. But this, in its own way, is worse, given everything that's going on in this country. As you said, with the pandemic, protesters, 40 million Americans out of work, and we're bickering over money. I cannot believe we are not in a negotiating room right now. It's been over a week. This is a crisis management situation, not a collective bargaining agreement. And they have to get together now if they're going to save this season.
Yeah, I did ask the commissioner that. He said the last time they met face-to-face was a week ago Sunday, so now 9 days to the point you made. Tim, I want one more for you here. Eduardo, I'll come back. I'll come to you in a second. But Tim, why is it happening? You talk about the history of lack of trust between the two sides. I felt for a period of time there as though that had improved. Why is it happening now this way when everyone knows what the stakes are?
Well, I think it's happening because the owners who clobbered the players in the last CBA basically got it in their minds that we can get anything we want from these players. So we are going to challenge them, divide the union, maybe break the union. And what's turned out is the union has really come together on this. The players are unified as much as they've been in many, many years. And I don't agree with Rob Manfred. I don't think 100% of our owners really want to play the game. I think the players want to play. Both sides are going to have to acquiesce here. But I think the owners misread the union here. And they're now understanding the union is really solid.
Eduardo, what are you thinking and what are you hearing from others?
Well, my biggest concern in all of this is, yes, I know that the commissioner was hired and is paid by the owners, but he's there for the best interest of the game. And I think that when I was in the union, that was always my concern. Make sure that the commissioner is in the best interest of the game. And yesterday, it just didn't feel, in this past few weeks, it hasn't felt like he's in the best interest of the game in general. Let's not forget, our biggest assets as fans is watching the players on the field. It's not watching the owners on the field. Yes, they're the ones that pay the paychecks, but the players are the biggest asset and the main attraction for us to be able to enjoy the game. And that, to me, should be the biggest biggest importance that Rob Manfred has to have right now, and his biggest interest should be, how do we get baseball back as soon as we can? We're going to lose on both ends. The players are losing, the owners are losing, no doubt. But at the end of the day, Mike, we're the ones, the fans are the ones that are losing the most.
Everyone loses in this. There's no question of that. Tim, earlier this morning, Hembo popped up a number on the screen. It's been 152 years since an entire calendar year passed in this country without any baseball being played in it. Do you believe this is going to happen this year, that there will be no baseball in 2020?
Greeny, I think there will be baseball. I don't say that with great confidence. To me, baseball is the only way out of this. The two sides need to agree on, say, a 70-game schedule, which is still possible. They play a tremendous race to the finish here, where every game matters and every team is in it. Then, in theory, you could have a spectacular October. That's what you need to bring the game back, is to play the game and put the players on the field. That's the only way out of this. And the only way it's going to work, though, is if the two sides agree on it. So I still think we're going to play because we have officially hit rock bottom.
And I hope that you are right. And Eduardo, the point I made earlier this morning with Tex is I think that some sort of 60-game mad dash, as opposed to the marathon that baseball usually is, could be a lot of fun. And I don't know if it would precipitate some sort of permanent change in the sport, but I think that they have a chance, if they can get on the field, to put together what could be a very entertaining year of baseball. What do you think?
Greeny, please don't say permanent on that aspect. But yeah, for this year, 66 games to me would make sense. I think it would be a mad dash. I think it put a lot of pressure right now on the managers and also on the players to be able to produce right away. It's not like the Oakland Athletics, a team that starts off slow and then picks it up once summer hits. Summer's here and you have to pick it up right away. And the first few weeks, we talk about the first month being a deciding factor. Well, without a doubt, the first few weeks will be a deciding factor in this race if we get the players on the field.
Eduardo, I'll tell you, you're exactly right in the mind of Joe Madden. So I can tell you all that I interviewed Joe Madden, now the Angels manager, before the Rob Manfred interview yesterday. And it was about a variety of other topics. And based upon what Manfred told us, we weren't able to run that interview because it just seemed completely incongruous not to have him addressing what had happened. But he said exactly that if they right. do play this, the first 2 weeks will be the most important 2 weeks of baseball that we've ever seen, because teams can get themselves buried before it even starts. All right, one other thing I want to make sure everyone has a chance to see, because it came out late yesterday. Several major league players yesterday released a video supporting the Black Lives Matter movement. And here is that video.
We've been told that our peaceful pleas
were not made at the right time,
at the right place,
in the right way.
We've been told to wait,
But we remember when Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. warned us
that the word wait
has almost always meant never.
We will wait no longer.
We'll make our voices louder.
For all of us who can.
And for all of those who could not.
8 minutes and 46 seconds is enough time to lift a knee.
To do what is right.
To say something.
To acknowledge the pain of the Black community.
You have cheered for us,
but we need you to cheer with us now.
When we need you most.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
Black lives matter.
It's our cheer for change.
It's your cheer for us.
It's these cheers that will unite us.
One team.
One dream.
Be the change.
Eduardo, what's your reaction there?
It hits me. It hits me because, again, we could be two shades lighter. We could be two shades darker. At the end of the day, we're creating awareness. And what we do have to do is continue to teach our children that equality matters, that what the history of what has happened in the past, our history matters. And the history that our kids are going to have and move forward matter. So yes, this is definitely a touches home. And I am very happy that Major League Baseball players, the African American players, the Latino players, we all get united in this, along with every player and future players that will be wearing this uniform. So yes, it matters.
Tim, taking into account the entire historical context of Major League Baseball, what did you think of that video?
Well, that was extremely powerful, and to give a platform to players like that is absolutely critical. But let's not forget, the platform works the best when the players are on the field. Continue that message while you're playing in the major leagues. I think it's even more powerful when you're out there on your platform playing the game.
Guys, thank you both so much, as always, for your perspective here. We'll see where it all goes as far as the labor negotiation piece is. Meanwhile, we continue this morning on Get Up to the NBA. We go next. Committed to finishing the season, but even the commissioner knows it won't be ideal. You'll hear him explain why next. And we found out yesterday Ezekiel Elliott tested positive for the coronavirus. Why that news could open Pandora's box for the NFL. On the way, Get Up on ESPN.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your goldfish to sing Bizet's Carmen? There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Especially the bus pipes are McDiamond. I love bringing out the pillow. It brings me that extra pressure to work hard. If I can, I'm coming to destroy you. You don't see it, and I catch you, and then that's it. Night-night.
That's it! Knockout victory! Joshua Greer! What a display of power! Throwing right hand after right hand.
He's a different fighter. This is Joshua Greer at his best.
It's Fight Night on ESPN. WBO top-ranked bantamweight contender Joshua Greer taking on Magic Mike Plano, who's 23-1 with 12 knockouts. Coverage of the prelims begins 8 Eastern right here on ESPN, the ESPN app, and ESPN Deportes. To the NBA, a new player coalition has been formed to give voice to players uncertain about committing to the NBA's restart plan in Orlando amidst the social unrest throughout the country. Kyrie Irving and Avery Bradley have taken a leadership role among the coalition, which released a statement to ESPN that read in part, "As an oppressed community, we are going on 500 plus years of being systematically targeted, used for our IP talent, and also still being killed by the very people that are supposed to protect and serve us. We have had enough. We are combating the issues that matter most. We will not accept the racial injustices that continue to be ignored in our communities. We will not be kept in the dark when it comes to our health and well-being. And we will not ignore the financial motivations and expectations that have prevented us historically from making sound decisions. Meanwhile, the Commissioner Adam Silver and Damian Lillard were on the special last night that I hosted addressing the growing concerns about the restart.
I can only say it may not be for everyone. I mean, it will entail enormous sacrifice on behalf of those players and for everyone involved, the coaches, the referees. Listen, it's not an ideal situation. We're trying to find a way to our own normal in the middle of a pandemic and now with enormous social unrest in the country. And so as we work through these issues, I can understand how some players may feel that it's not for them. If a player chooses not to come, it's not a breach of his contract. We accept that.
I think two things. I think, first of all, with the pandemic that we've been in over, you know, the course of a few months, I think basketball would have been great for that, or will be great for that, because it'll be us getting back to somewhat normalcy, you know, of having our athletes on TV playing, doing what we do. But I think as far as the racial injustice, I think that's where a lot of the struggle is for a lot of athletes. And a lot of our hearts are with our people. You know, our mind is with our people. And we feel like we should be a part of that. You know, we should be a part of that fight. You know, but I think a lot of guys in the league have a point. You know, I think Kyrie and Dwight have a point. You know, so I understand it all.
Jay Will back with us this morning, and our NBA insider Brian Windhorst joins us too. Wendy, how can you tell us the NBA is reacting to some of these player concerns about the restart?
Well, Greeny, you know, the NBA has been very busy, obviously, working on this, but they have allowed a void to exist, both the union and the league. It's now been 11 and 12 days since they had their votes. We still do not have the announcement of a protocol. We still do not have any sort of announcement on what the league would do in Orlando to allow the players to have a social voice. We have vague references, but no announcement. And Kyrie and the group that he has been building have come into that void. And I was pretty surprised yesterday that the NBA didn't have an announcement, or at least an announcement that there was going to be an announcement. Because in the past, they have done this. They have worked together on this, specifically when the national anthem protests were hitting the NFL. The union and players got together and announced some initiatives, and they haven't done that. And so they have allowed essentially a third party here to rise up, and it is now becoming not just a distraction, but a real issue for them to grapple with, in addition to all the economic and safety concerns heading into that bubble.
Jay, you sent me an interesting note on how the situation in baseball might actually play a role in all of this. I'd love you to share that thought.
Yeah, the NBA is assembling the plane after they've already jumped off the cliff. And I think we're seeing this in real time. And within the Black community, this narrative is out there about no distractions, no distractions. We don't want any distractions. And one of the things I said yesterday on the show, Greeny, was that if baseball were to play, that will still be a distraction that should play into the decision of what NBA players choose to do. Well, baseball doesn't have a season, and now you have a league that is majority Black. And Kyrie alluded to this the other day. Regardless of whether you think it's right or wrong, this is the opinion of the coalition and how they're thinking about this to a degree. You're then putting a lot of Black players in the position is, do they want to provide entertainment and have that narrative out there about no distractions? So I think that puts way more pressure and a lot more weight on the shoulders of a lot of players who are already in between with their decision.
Fascinating way of looking at it, and we'll see if it does wind up playing into their decision. Quickly, Wendy, while I have you, what are your thoughts on, as we see several NFL players yesterday testing positive for coronavirus, what is the impact of that around the sports landscape?
1 week from today, Greeny, the NBA is going to begin starting testing players to get them set up for the bubble. They want to eradicate the virus before the bubble starts. And considering what we've seen in colleges, considering what we've seen in the NFL, an MLS player, at least one, you have to assume that NBA players are going to test positive. And yet here we are 1 week away. We do not have a protocol for what to do. Adam Silver last night saying that this may not be for everybody is a bit of a shift in rhetoric. They acknowledge that this is going to be very difficult. difficult, and it's getting more difficult by the day.
There's no question about it. And Jay Will, what are you hearing on that front from people you've talked to? The coronavirus piece of this has been talked about less, understandably so, in the last few weeks. But it remains obviously a significant concern for anyone who is planning on going down there. What part of that discussion are you having?
Well, it's a massive concern. Obviously, I think a lot of people just reacted to the social injustice aspect of this yesterday because that was a statement that came out today. But don't be remiss to think that the pandemic is not a major part of this discussion as well. We've seen an uptick over the last couple of days. And, you know, I know that different narratives are flying out there about, oh, we have more testing, even though the data is proving that we haven't had more testing. And I think a lot of guys are really uneasy about everything, Greeny. A lot of guys don't know all the details because there is a lot of rhetoric and there are different extremes on both sides that are pushing different agendas. So it's challenging for guys to have accessibility to the correct to make an informed decision.
So what is your sense, Wendy, of how it will go? I guess I want to ask you if you think that the NBA's restart plan is in real jeopardy here.
I don't think it's in jeopardy because I think it's ultimately so much money and so much influence, and the majority of players still feel that way. But the union and the NBA need to move forward. They have to give information, and specifically, they have to reach out and begin to announce what they intend to do to make players feel like they can use their platforms in Orlando. Damian Lillard said it. I think a lot of people feel that way, but we need to hear some of the details of how, and I say that recognizing how complicated all of this is.
Now, we'll talk about this further when Stephen A. joins us in just a few minutes. Wendy, thank you very much. Always terrific to see you. So we have Stephen A. coming up. We'll talk about this and we'll talk about football. Roger Goodell telling me he supports teams signing Colin Kaepernick and offer the quarterback an invitation. You will hear what that is as we continue next. Get up on ESPN.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Coming up this morning, after we wrap up Get Up, it's time for First Take in its entirety at 10:30. And you see the programming day there, SportsCenter, NFL Live, The Jump, Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable, around the horn, all packed into that 4 o'clock hour. SportsCenter, which includes an appearance from Mike and Tony, coming up 5 o'clock Eastern, and wrap up your day with Scott Van Pelt tonight after the fights. It is another full day of sports here on ESPN. And as we approach the top of the hour, for those of you tuning in to see First Take, they will come your way, as I mentioned, in a half hour, in its entirety, for a full 2 hours. But Stephen A. is going to join us in just a moment with his take on a variety of really big stories from yesterday. I'm Mike Greenberg in Bristol. This is Get Up, and our top story today involves baseball's commissioner. After telling our Carl Ravitch last week that he was 100% certain there would be a season, Rob Manfred yesterday backtracked on that. Here was his response during our SportsCenter special when I asked him if he still felt 100%.
Well, I know the owners are 100% committed to getting baseball back on the field. Unfortunately, I can't tell you that I'm 100% certain that's going to happen. It's just a disaster for our game. Absolutely no question about it. It shouldn't be happening. And it's important that we find a way to get past it and get the game back on the field for the benefit of our fans. We are running out of time. The clock is ticking on this. But the key, the important first step is a willingness on the part of the MLBPA to get back at the table and engage in the process. I'm not confident. I think there's real risk. And as long as there's no dialogue, that real risk is going to continue.
So those were the comments of the commissioner. The reaction, a lot of it, this is from Trevor Bauer asking, so Rob, explain to us how you can be 100% sure but not confident there'll be at the same time. What changed between those statements? Players told you to set the season, but it's too early to set the season right now. Max Scherzer tweeted, Rob Manfred and the owners are walking back on their word again. The fans do not deserve this. I'll say it one more time. Tell us when and where. Bryce Harper, who recently joked about playing football, tweeted, what's good at the Eagles? So we'll see. All right. The one and only Stephen A. Smith is with us this morning. And again, First Take is coming up in a half hour. And Stephen A., I have a bunch of things I want to get to with you this morning. But I did want to get a quick thought from you on this. Specifically, in the context of everything that is going on right now, what is your reaction to the fact that baseball is airing all of this dirty laundry in such a public way?
Oh, well, I've always been a critic of Major League Baseball from the standpoint that they're always the last guys to the party. That's the analogy that I religiously use. With the whole steroids thing, if it were never for Congress getting involved and Bud Selig as the commissioner at that time really making it a priority, baseball would have never addressed the steroid issue, the amphetamines issue, some of the things that they've been, that has plagued the sport for many years. They're always the last of the party, and they've been assisted, as far as I'm concerned, by federal government and by America, period, because of the label of its being America's national pastime. When you think about white picket fences and beautiful homes and mom and pops with their little kids at games or what have you, antitrust legislation and things of that nature have always strongly favored Major League Baseball. So as a result, they've never been incentivized to have to step forward and ever be ahead of the curve. They hold on to their tradition, their ability and willingness to police themselves more so than any other sport in North American history has ever been allowed to. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they come across as flagrantly tone deaf, that they don't seem to be mindful or cognizant of the 40 plus million people that have been unemployed, furloughed, may never get half of which may never get their jobs back, the economy struggling the way that it is. It doesn't surprise me at all that baseball is tone deaf to it, because they've been tone deaf for decades. As far as I'm concerned, as far back as the 1920s, they've been allowed to get away with it because America has allowed them to get away with it. This is the first time in history, however, they may be in some jeopardy, because there's a new day, there's a new veneer, a new complexion on things. And as a result, we're highlighting their foibles, we're highlighting their inefficiencies and their tone deafness, and they will be made to pay for this daily if there is not a baseball season. I can assure you of that.
Tim Kirkjian said he thinks this circumstance is worse than the year that they called off the World Series. All right, next topic for you, Stephen A.
I agree.
Colin Kaepernick has not played since the 2016 season in the NFL, when he kneeled during the national anthem to protest racial inequality. In our conversation during our SportsCenter special yesterday, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said he would encourage a team to sign Kaepernick. Here was that conversation.
If he wants to resume his career in the NFL, that obviously is going to take a team to make that decision, but I welcome that, support a club making that decision, and encourage them to do that. If his efforts are not on the field, but and continuing to work in this space, we welcome to that table and to be able to help us and guide us and help us make better decisions about the kinds of things that need to be done in communities. We have invited him in before, and we want to make sure that everybody's welcome at that table. We should have listened to our players earlier. Our players, including Colin Kaepernick, including Eric Reid, including Kenny Stills, and so many others, Malcolm Jenkins, so many people that to really brought these issues to light.
And as we bring Marcus in as well, Stephen A., I can add just a little bit of context that I had every intention of asking a variety of questions about Colin Kaepernick last night, but the commissioner got to those. He named those players before I did, before I could get to them. So for those who are wondering if he was responding to a direct question, he was not. He chose to take the conversation there on his own. Take that for what it's worth. Having said that, Stephen A., what's your reaction to what the commissioner said about Kaepernick last night?
Don't particularly give a damn. It doesn't matter to me what the Commissioner Roger Goodell says about Colin Kaepernick, because I've never considered Commissioner Roger Goodell the problem. He could have been a more significant part of the solution. He could have shown better leadership, or been a bit more strong-willed and imposing with the owners that he has to answer to. But I've never really considered him the problem, because he's not somebody that ostracized Colin Kaepernick from the league. I happen to know that specifically because of his relationship with Jay-Z and Roc Nation and what they were trying to do in terms of getting Colin Kaepernick a tryout, and even actions before that. Commissioner Roger Goodell isn't the problem. The owners are the problem. Here's the solution that I would care about. First of all, I don't think that Colin Kaepernick, quote unquote, deserves a job. I think he deserves a tryout under fair and equitable circumstances, where we're able to judge his skills, because he has been away from the game for 4 years. So let's see if he can still get it done. I believe that he can, but I don't believe that because of this situation that you just walk in and get an NFL job. That's not how that works. Give him a tryout, sure, but let him have to earn the job based on strictly his performance and nothing more. for. But outside of that, what I would like to see people asking Roger Goodell for, instead of just taking a knee or engaging in symbolic gestures, how about rallying a slew of owners to go up on Capitol Hill to push for federal legislation in combination with the lobbyists, with the assistance of the lobbyists, of course. Why not go up on Capitol Hill and push for these federal legislations to be implemented and taking place? The businesses that patronize the NFL brand that obviously are strongly supported by the black community. How about rallying with the players themselves and making sure that you impact those businesses by letting them know there's no more that they can do for minority and disenfranchised communities in this country? You certainly profit off of us. You exploit us. Now, what are you going to do for us outside of taking advantage of us? Why don't you do something along those lines? Because when you have white individuals in position of power, these are the people that they communicate with on an everyday basis. They're in those rooms. They've ingratiated themselves. They've networked. They've cultivated those relationships, and they're in a position to make a difference. So why not encourage Roger Goodell to engage in those kind of actions instead of engaging in symbolic gestures that amount to nothing unless those actions follow those symbolic gestures?
Marcus, I'll get to you in a minute, but Steve, I feel a need to follow up quickly by reminding everyone that the NFL has made a pledge to donate $250 million towards that end. In your mind, is that enough, or do you feel that, that more needs to be done?
No. No, because to me, it's not enough, but it's not because I want to dismiss their gesture of the money coming from themselves. I'm saying that if we're talking about real profound and real profound change, you have to get others involved. It's not about the NFL. It's about society. So let society make its collective contribution to the cause, not the NFL. If the NFL is able just to throw money off onto the issue, that doesn't resolve our problems. It only serves to quiet the NFL voices. That's all it does, but it doesn't resolve the issues affecting our society. I disagree with that, and I'm just of the mindset, get others involved, get a collective effort, a maelstrom of get these guys in corporate America swarmed with collective muscle. That's what I'm about.
Yeah, fair enough. To be clear, I wasn't even stating an opinion. I was just reminding everyone that that was something to be mentioned in the discussion. Marcus, the floor is yours. What are your thoughts?
Sure. Yeah, when you think about this whole entire process, and I agree with Stephen A., the process for Colin Kaepernick is the most important. A real shot. Like a real shot. I mean, we obviously went back and forth with the workout and what things were transpiring leading up to that. Work Colin Kaepernick out just like you would work any serious candidate out to get a job on your team. And if he's good enough, sign him. And if he's good enough to play, play him. And we all come from that narrative as football players. You earn what you get on the field. He was totally ousted by the NFL, not because of football, but because of his stance and what he believed in. So that whole part about let's kumbaya this thing and give Colin Kaepernick a job because everybody is willfully addressing the issues that we have going on socially right now is not going to fly. The process needs to be the way it is so it doesn't feel fake, phony, or tainted in any way. And nothing should be set up or structured outside of the normal way you approach working a player out to get a job in the NFL for Colin Kaepernick. All things need to run and go how they go as far as the football side. And to Stephen A's point about, I'm going to share this, and I don't know if you want. I called him yesterday. I said, Stephen A, why don't we have people that's been on the ground fighting for social change, injustices, activism on television, talking about how sports and athletes can implement themselves in the actual change in what's going on. We raised our voices. Don't stop doing that. We protested. Don't stop doing that. We've donated money as the NFL has. Don't stop doing that. Now there have been people that's been fighting this fight for years, 30, 40 years that have invested their time, their energy, blood and sweat and everything in trying to get this thing changed. This momentum that NFL players, NBA players are talking about right now needs to be illustrated. Tell people what to do. I'm of that narrative. You guys know me from a foundation. If I don't know something, I want to ask the question of how do I do this? Do we put together busing for people to get the voting booths? Do we create a task force for people to be able to go through voting, the voting process in a real way and it not be set up in the wrong way? There are things that I'm standing outside saying, what do we do? And a lot of these athletes are putting that in a position. Now we need to start putting that in the forefront on how to get certain things changed about this country.
And Stephen A., what I'd love to ask you to sort of wrap up this part of the discussion, I was going to play some sound, but it's a simple question. Because with all the things Marcus is talking about and all the incredibly important issues that are before us right now, what role does sports actually play in that? We're talking about NBA players questioning whether they will come back and play. We're talking about maybe that will lead to football players having the same questions. Baseball's in a whole other situation. But what role does players playing play in this part of the conversation?
Well, it's not just about playing. It's about what they're doing while they're playing. That's number one. Number two, to me, it's about two things, and they coincide with one another. It's about elevating the level of awareness to the pertinent issues. And number two, assisting in mobilizing whatever forces are necessary while we hand it off to people who know what the hell they're doing. I'm very fond of Dwight Howard, for example, as a person. I think that he's a good person. I think that Kyrie Irving is a very good person. I don't mean to cast any aspersions on them in terms of what I disagree with, but I watched Dwight Howard on television last night on Don Lemon's show on CNN, and I got to be honest with you, Dwight Howard didn't come across great for one reason and one reason only. He told us how he felt. He didn't tell us specifically what he was feeling and why. He didn't tell us about what needs to be done in order to resolve the situation. And these are important things to bring up. Why? Because throughout history, there are selective voices that were chosen to disseminate a message to the masses because we know how easily things can be misconstrued, camouflaged, misinterpreted on purpose, by the way, as well as indirectly or accidentally. And we have to pay attention and be mindful of those things. So when we talk about sports and the role sports can play, it's not just about a game. It's about understanding economic empowerment. When Malcolm X talked, he talked about economic empowerment. When Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talked, he talked about economic empowerment. Every black leader that you can find, no matter what year, what decade, what millennial, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is everybody talked about economic empowerment in this nation because we understand that's what stirs the cup. We're usually at the bottom of the food chain in that regard. The top of the food chain are white individuals, specifically white males, who have been in positions of power and used black folks like puppets on strings in terms of what they wanted from us and how they wanted to exploit us. If we say we want change and you have players who are economically empowered, then use that empowerment. Don't surrender it and give it up and end up back in the same situation that you were before, fragmented, divided, disenfranchised, and beyond. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. And that's what we have to pay attention to. As people in the sports world, we all have a role to play in mobilizing and galvanizing the forces while elevating the level of awareness and then hand it off to people who knows. A pastor once said this, Greeny, there is no success without a successor. You got to have somebody to pass the baton to. That is a problem that has plagued the black community for many, many years. We can't let that happen now.
This conversation continues on First Take. They're about 14 minutes away. Stephen A. Max and company. Guys, thank you. It's wonderful to have this discussion, and we will continue to. Meanwhile, we have more news on this day that we'll get to next. It's on Ezekiel Elliott's positive test for coronavirus. It raises one big question in the NFL, and we'll answer it next.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday. Social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Ladies and gentlemen, three iconic legends, three of the best to ever do it. Get on your feet one more time for Peyton Manning, Abby Wambach, and Kobe Bryant.
This is a great night, and to be up here being recognized alongside Abby and Kobe, two legends, makes it very special.
For me, it was never about trying to be the best player in the world or scoring more goals than anyone else. What it was about was just working as hard as I could.
We're not on this stage just because of talent or ability. We're up here because of 4 a.m. We're up here because of 2-a-days or 5-a-days. We're up here because we had a dream and let nothing stand in our way.
Best of ESPYs is presented by Capital One. Tune in to the ESPYs presented by Capital One on Sunday, June 21st at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Back to the NFL, multiple Cowboy and Texan players, including Ezekiel Elliott, tested positive coronavirus. Elliott's agent told NFL Network the Cowboys star running back tested positive and is feeling better. Last night, I asked Roger Goodell about the tests.
We're going to have positive tests. Our players who are going to be in that, our personnel are going to be involved in the front office. Our league office employees have been involved. So positive tests are going to happen. The issue is, can we obviously prevent as many of those from happening, but in addition, treat them quickly, isolate them, and prevent them from impacting on other personnel. And I think our protocols are working. And I think to date, we're seeing very positive reactions in the sense of making sure that we respond quickly, protect the personnel that may be impacted by that and others that may be in contact with them.
Super important stuff. Diana Russini joins us this morning. Diana, what do you have on the protocol for this moving forward?
Yeah, let me give you the headline here. Everything is still being discussed. So this Thursday, the league is actually going to talk to all 32 teams on a Zoom call to have a conversation about what this could look like come training camp in terms of the medical side of all this. But yesterday, the players union, they actually met with the agents on a Zoom call as well to sort of go through some of the conversations that are being had with the players union and the league. And really the biggest takeaway from what I could hear, or at least from what I could gather, was that players will be tested up to 3 times per week for COVID-19. So that's a starting point. But for what everyone really wants to know, which is when is training camp starting? Right now, the league is saying July 28th, but all the coaches that I've been talking to over the last few days, they are planning their summers with their families as if training camp could possibly start as early as July 15th. So right now, all still just being discussed, time on the side of the NFL.
That's less than a month away. Ed Werder earlier this morning told us he's heard from a lot of coaches and people inside the league skeptical about being able to get this done under these circumstances. Are you hearing that as well?
And getting it done in terms of getting football out on the field come training camp.
Correct.
I was told that the thought is going to be there's going to be a window that they're going to give these teams about a week or two before training camp actually starts to get everyone adjusted to how this is going to work, from getting their temperatures taken in the morning to dealing with how the cafeteria is going to look, the locker rooms, the weight rooms. So there could be a little bit of like a practice period until the real thing gets going. But obviously, they're all still just paying attention to where we are at as a nation when it comes to the pandemic.
Absolutely. Rob Ninkovich, if you were playing now, what would you be thinking?